Well, hello, and welcome back to Life Coaching. This is Mike Fitch, and it has been a minute. For those of you that care, I apologize, and for those of you that don't care, I can't say I really blame you. So today, I finally found enough motivation and or inspiration, I guess, to record another podcast for what it's worth. And today I wanted to dive into traumas and triggers and self-worth, some things that I have been working on over the last several years and decided it was time to share it with whoever was willing to listen. So triggers make us do things out of fear, out of deeply ingrained habits that are linked to hidden wounds or unresolved traumas brought on by any number of things or people from our past. So those can just be things that we just never dealt with, right? Something happened that we didn't like and we just buried it deep inside so that we didn't have to feel it or we didn't know how to feel it. And so that just stays there. And then when things occur later on that then trigger that trauma, we experience similar emotions of anxiety, sadness, anger, fear. And it keeps us from experiencing our true selves because we are just continually caught in this loop of trying to formulate our lives and make decisions in our lives that will keep us from triggering those traumas, right? So it's this big game of tag where we are trying to navigate through these traumas that we've experienced so as not to trigger them, right? We don't want anything to happen that will trigger these things because then it brings up these emotions that we haven't dealt with, where if we would just realize if we would just deal with them, which I realize that's easier said than done, and allow ourselves to feel that and release that trauma, then really everything becomes much easier. But most of us, me included, would rather just live with what we know, right? Whether that's fear, anger, resentment, whatever it is, than branch out and dive into what could potentially be really, really scary to deal with things that obviously were scary or we wouldn't have hidden them, buried them, repressed them, suppressed them in the past. So we all need to allow ourselves to feel through our triggers and identify hidden traumas. With that, we need to trace the source. What originally caused that? What was it that caused us to bury this trauma? We need to feel it, and then we need to release it. We do this in order to avoid reverting back to deeply held habits and coping mechanisms by developing awareness. Now, what I've found is I feel like my awareness is pretty high. Developing awareness is the first step. The next step is then putting that into action, right? Application. And application is always the hard part. Awareness is like, yeah, I'm aware of why I do these things, but am I creating different habits? Am I putting it into action in a different way so that I don't just continue these same habitual responses? So this can all be assisted by prayer, meditation, breath work, whatever it is that you choose. Counseling, there are any number of things, cranial sacral work, any number of things that could potentially help us deal with these traumas. Reading, seeking out answers, listening to our bodies, and looking inside to find out what the root of the trigger is the best starting point, potentially the only starting point. What causes that pang of fear? What causes that tension in our solar plexus that then radiates through our entire body? I feel mine in my solar plexus. I'll feel mine in my left shoulder. Sometimes I feel mine in my teeth. So this has been my path of discovery for the past several years. So with that, my dad died last August, August of 2021, and it was an extremely unique experience. I'm not telling you this for sympathy. It's the last thing that I want and or need in the telling of this story, because I wasn't sad. I didn't know the man. He left us when I was 4 and was minimally present until I was 11, then became a complete non-entity. So I reached out into my 30s, trying to make a connection at the prompting of Kimmy, my ex-wife, who was always big on crucial conversations, God bless her. I was big on avoiding said crucial conversations. So in seeing my dad for the first time in decades, I found out that his absence in my life was actually a gift, as he spent the entire time making excuses for his lot in life, taking no accountability for his actions, for his mistakes, and then at his funeral, there was a theme. There were more excuses from everyone that spoke in remembrance of him. I see that he came by his lack of accountability honestly. All I felt from the moment I heard of his passing was indifference. I kept thinking I should feel sad, angry, resentful, something. And I just kept, it was a really odd experience for me. No matter how much I sat with it, I could not come up with a feeling other than indifference. So losing a parent was supposed to be a monumental event, right? That's whatever, it seems to be super impactful for people. And it just wasn't for me. So then I figured there was something wrong with me. Maybe I was broken. I had been dealing with his abandonment for most of my life. I had resolved my issues with him. My issues created from his abandonment will never go away, but I'm getting much better at recognizing the roots of my dysfunction as issues continue to rise to the surface. So I finally realized that indifference was perfectly okay. It was a direct reflection of how he was as a father, completely and utterly indifferent. So I wasn't mad. He wasn't mean. He wasn't abusive. He was just indifferent. And so, I guess in the end, we were both indifferent. So in part of my ongoing journey unearthing traumas, I realized that I've never felt like I was enough. And I know that all ties back to him in one way or another. Always had to work tirelessly to make people like me, to prove myself. I mean, if your dad is indifferent to you, then what kind of work must you put in to make other people who did not bring you into this world like you? Coming to this realization has been powerful. It has explained a lot about my feelings of unworthiness, because we are all enough. We just have to be us, right? I recently thanked a couple of people for making me feel like I was enough. I cried for a significant amount of time in my car, or my chamber of tears, over the recognition that I've never acknowledged myself as enough, so why would anyone else? I've always known this at some level, but it now had texture. People will treat and see you similarly to how you treat and see yourself. In putting this realization into practice, my self-talk has improved drastically due to my improved self-awareness. I have typed and hung up sheets of paper in my kids' rooms that say, "You are enough. Just be you, I promise." I want them to live their lives fully, not live to try to fulfill some expectations from me or anyone else. I've gone through a veritable metamorphosis over the last 3 or 4 years, and I'm just now beginning to see measurable growth, and so much of it is directly associated with shedding my old strongly held beliefs and ideas about myself. It's an ongoing process, one I hope never stops. I hold no grudges. I don't have to forgive anyone but myself, because it all starts and ends with me. I've felt a shift. I've become so sensitive to negativity that it literally pushes me away from some people and situations. I don't ever remember feeling it so acutely as I have lately. I have to physically remove myself from such encounters at times. The negative vibration disturbed me that much. I was notoriously negative and pessimistic, regardless of any degree of success that I achieved in the past. And I can feel myself slip back into that role if I'm not careful. Part of me enjoys struggle, enjoys suffering. It is my martyr complex. I was even fairly well known for my negative and pessimistic rants as a teacher. So rather than dealing with the root of the issue, I was capitalizing on my dysfunction and wallowing in it for attention. What I realize now is that all of it was a direct reflection of my dissatisfaction with myself. I had a friend one time who was single for a very long time, and he's a really funny guy. And at one point I told him, I said, "You know what? You can either be funny or you can have a girlfriend, but your sense of humor is never going to attract a mate." And I have since then looked at that and tried to apply it to myself. The humor that I used was really dysfunction, right? that I got a lot of laughs and people enjoyed my rants and my negativity and going on and on about various things. But really, that was just me covering up dysfunction. I wasn't dealing with it. So I guess I had a choice. I could continue to be funny in that way, or I could deal with my shit. And never being happy with me, I couldn't be happy with anything else. Happiness seemed elusive, and at times still does. The older I got, the more resentful I became about having to work so hard to prove myself to everyone, even though in reality, I didn't have to prove myself to anyone except me. To sacrifice myself and prioritize everyone else's needs was burdensome. None of which was anyone's fault. I did that to myself completely because I never asked for what I wanted or needed. I never communicated what I desired. I never gave people a chance to give me what I needed because I did not know what I needed. It's still a struggle today. People asking me what I want or what I need literally gives me anxiety. So there's obviously more work to be done. But it's getting better. Realizing that it's not selfish to express what you want, what you need. Realizing that boundaries are healthy. Telling people no is healthy. These are all difficult things for me to do. But again, there's that awareness. We'll see if I can actually put it into application. I realize now that having to prove myself was all in my head. I have nothing to prove. I'm enough just as I am, just as we all are. I was my own worst enemy, just as we all are. I constantly needed approval and affirmation because I thought I was deficient. I constantly had to prove I would work harder than anyone because I thought I was deficient. I worried constantly about what people thought about me because I thought I was deficient. I built my entire self-worth on my career and my success because I thought I was deficient. So now I'd like to transition over to a topic of scarcity. So I understand scarcity mindset. It makes complete and utter sense to me. The first time I heard it, I was like, yep, that's me. I get that completely. I know I've suffered from the affliction my whole life in being direct opposition to an abundance mindset. And I have a very, very good friend of mine that speaks to me continually about an abundance mindset. And it is such a foreign concept. I literally get frustrated trying to wrap my head around it. But I think I took scarcity and thought I could do with even less. I adopted what I called a deprivation mindset. I've looked this up to see if it's even a thing. And what I found deals mainly with food and diet. My idea of my own deprivation mindset is that I've gone through life determined to prove to people that I need absolutely nothing from them. Nothing. I won't ask for anything. I will require nothing. I can live without food, companionship, friendship, love, affection, money, or material items. I never spent a dime growing up, at least not on myself. I saved everything. I managed to save $5,000 working for $5 an hour part-time through 3 years of high school. I walked to school even after I got my license because I didn't want to pay for gas. I ate school lunch for 12 years because it was cheap. And I think that might be one of my biggest traumas looking back. With my $5,000, some small scholarships and help from my mom, I escaped college with absolutely no debt. Now, while in college, I almost starved to death because I refused to spend money on food. My mom eventually interceded and bought me groceries, but I was determined to be a martyr, to sacrifice myself. For what? I have no idea. This approach filtered through my whole life, avoiding opportunities to be social, avoiding opportunities to have fun, something I still struggle with today, to ask for what I want or need. Even today, if I'm at someone's house and they offer me a drink, I will instinctively, for no good reason, even if I'm thirsty, turn it down. Why? Hell if I know. To prove I don't need it, to avoid being a burden, even though they offered it to me, it still feels like I'm being needy or burdensome to accept it. This made its way into relationships. I never dared ask for what I wanted or needed. Seldom expressed dissent. I have had very few relationships, especially considering my very advanced age, but it must have been hard to be with me. Never knowing what I wanted or needed, not understanding my mounting resentment. I didn't dare ask for anything. I could not be a burden. I could not give someone a reason to leave because they were going to do that all on their own. So how would they know what I wanted? That had to be a challenge. I was lucky that they liked and or loved me, and that should be enough. I dare not ask for more. Now, on the rare occasion where I was brazen enough to ask for what I wanted and was denied, I would then psychologically sprint in retreat because my issues, my traumas, made me take everything personally. And in reading a book called The Four Agreements, one of the major aspects of The Four Agreements, one of the four agreements is don't take things personally. It's something that I'm working very diligently on now. I could not distance myself enough from it to see whether someone said yes or no was not a direct reflection on my self-worth. I would martyr myself. I would analyze why I felt this way. I would just apologetically chastise myself for asking in the first place. I let other people's responses control how I felt about myself. I could not verbalize what I was feeling. I wouldn't dare bring up the fact that I was feeling rejected or that I had a need that wasn't being met and have an open and honest conversation about it. That might have led to a greater understanding on both sides. Wouldn't that have been convenient? Such an admission would feel selfish. I had to prioritize the status quo, not rock the boat, not understanding that everyone in my life would benefit from me being the best version of myself and having my needs met, thus not making it a selfish act. Instead, I deflected and repressed and martyred myself until I literally erupted in a wave of self-loathing and self-sabotage that ruined everything I had built. I have definitely gotten better, but even today, I feel I have no idea how to have fun. I will be asked what I want or what I like, and my mind goes completely blank. I have historically hated receiving gifts my whole life. Not because I didn't want them or I didn't appreciate them, but because I had no idea how to receive them. I had no idea how to act. I had no idea how to make sure I seemed appropriately appreciative. I never felt worthy of gifts. Instead of just a genuine thank you, I would shrink back and try to disappear. Feeling guilty for receiving the gift, thus seeming unappreciative, which was the opposite of how I actually felt, I simply felt unworthy. This was never more evident than with my mother-in-law, who's an amazing woman, who bought me the most amazing and expensive gifts all the time, and all I ever felt was guilt and shame, having absolutely no idea how to express my gratitude, thus doing the exact opposite of my intention and inadvertently seeming selfish, aloof, and unappreciative. Which in the end, I guess, points to the fact that it was all about self-worth. If I had loved myself, I would have felt worthy of fun, money, friends, intimacy, gifts, love. But I didn't think I deserved it. I wasn't enough as I was. When really all I had to do was extend my sincere gratitude. All I had to do was love myself. Gratitude is one of the most powerful tools there are in interpersonal relationships. Self-love is the key to improved relationships because being the best version of yourself benefits everyone around you. We can all choose to wrap up in our blanket of dysfunction, warm, familiar, comforting, and the veiled comfort that comes with it. Or we can dive deep and analyze ourselves and our traumas and release that shit so that we can live a happier, healthier life. Well, that was a long time in coming. I appreciate you listening. I hope everyone is well. I hope you enjoy the summer, and I hope it is not a year before I record another podcast. Take care of yourselves. We'll see you next time.